Now this is ska right here. I thought for some reason I had
Dom is a gentleman and a scholar.
For some reason in my head, I had that Real Big Fish was a Canadian band, but they're not.
It's Great Big Sea.
They're from, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
that's what
Real
I'm
Big
of.
Fish and Great Big Sea. Really, I mean, they're not one in the same, but they're in partnership.
They may as well. It's very similar. Oh, there we go. All right, it is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. He's Thomas Drance.
I think for this Mattis conversation,
yes,
why don't we do a swing around prospective matchups, like matchups
sure,
as they sit today. Ask one question for each prospective matchup.
Okay.
How about this? Let's challenge ourselves to frame it this way.
All right. We'll get to our guest in just a second. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec Studios. All right. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors. For over 50 years, visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. Now joining us, as mentioned, covering the NHL for the Score, he is John Mattis. John, thanks for doing this. How are you? John, we got you.
Oh, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Now we can hear you. Yes. There we go.
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing? Are you on? You're on site somewhere?
No, we're not. We're just in the studio, and things are just going wrong, apparently. But that's all right. We're happy to have you on. And we were just saying, we'll do maybe a little bit of a spin around some of the prospective playoff matchups. And let's start with the opponent the Canucks are going to face tonight, the Dallas Stars. Man, potentially a very, very tough draw if they're not able to, do a miracle track down of the Winnipeg Jets here at the end of the season. They're staring at a matchup with Colorado. And, I mean, the storyline's there, obviously, with Mikko Rantanen now on the Stars. But with the Stars missing potentially Miro Heiskanen into the first round at least, how do you look at that matchup between two Stanley Cup contenders in the first round?
Yeah, I would say Dallas is pretty vulnerable there, as good as they look on paper as a whole. Like, Heiskanen is so essential. Like, you could argue he's the most valuable defenseman in the league relative to the rest of the blue line, because it drops off pretty quickly after him. Obviously, Thomas Harley's a good player. They do have other NHL players on the roster, but that right side is a disaster. And I'm just picturing, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar going to town on, the Matt Dumbas of the world, Ilya Labushkin, whoever it may be. So I just,
Cody Ceci, baby.
Just like,
don't forget Cody Ceci.
Like, yeah, or Cody Ceci. It's not like the Dallas Stars are like missing, let me think, Roope Hintz. Like, obviously that'd be a big hit to their forward group, but, they could probably get through it. I feel like Heiskanen is really the holding everything together on the back end, and would be leaned on heavily, probably 30, 33 minutes a night or whatever. So that's the first thing that comes to mind as far as that matchup, and also how well Natchez has looked in Colorado. That also jumps off the page.
With the St. Louis Blues ending their win streak just shy of 13 against the Winnipeg Jets, we're looking like the Jets have enough room to sort of seize first in the West. It's going to be Minnesota or maybe Calgary, but most likely Minnesota here. How high do you see the stakes being for this Jets group?
I mean, it's pretty high. Like, I guess, contract-wise, Hellebuck, Scheifele locked up long-term, Morrissey. Like, I don't know if it's like, to the Maple Leafs level of scrutiny if they come out in the first round, but it would be a huge fumble. I mean, especially with that matchup, if they do draw Minnesota, I feel like that's a fairly easy out for Winnipeg, given what they've accomplished all season. And I don't know about you guys, but I was waiting for them to fall off at some point. I'm like, okay, off to a nice start, first third of the season, whatever. And then, they keep going and they keep going and they keep going, and kind of like Washington, where, none of it's been fake. They're full marks for what they've done. And Hellebuck, like, at some point, he's going to excel in the playoffs. Like, I think if we're being realistic, he hasn't choked in the playoffs by any means. It just hasn't quite played up to his own standard. And I think that a first-round matchup with a Minnesota can be relatively easy for him, and I guess set the tone and take that pressure off and they can, you know, if I were to project right here, right now, I mean, that's a 5-game series for me.
Do you have any concerns about Hellebuck's workload? Because he's already at 60 games played, which is where he was last year. Then you throw in the Four Nations work in there as well, and he didn't get that time off like a lot of other players. That's always how I've kind of looked at the Hellebuck in the playoffs thing. More than him being a, you know, not a big game performer or a choker or anything, is just, man, he works a lot in the regular season, and then I wonder if he's running out of gas by the time the playoffs come around. Does that concern you at all from Winnipeg's perspective?
It does. I wouldn't say it's like a major concern, especially if you were just thinking one round and a weaker opponent, but 100%, like, this guy shouldn't be leading the league in games played and minutes, yet here we are, and he's going to be at least in the top three. And yeah, you mix in the Four Nations, which was demanding in its own right, and I don't know, like, it could come back to haunt Winnipeg. I don't know why they haven't leaned on Eric Comrie here and there, especially, I guess now the lead for the division is, you know, is not as wide as it used to be, but still,
yeah.
This is about the playoffs. This is about going on a long run. So, you know, if I were Scott Arneil, I would have reeled things back already, but clearly, Hellebuck probably has a pretty big say in everything too, like given his stature and his value to the franchise. So I'm sure it's a big push and pull in that respect.
The other division leader in the Western Conference is the Vegas Golden Knights, and, you know, not home free from the Kings yet, but likely to win that division. And I was saying the other day on the show, it feels like this has been the least kind of newsy, dramatic season Vegas has had in the league, and yet there they are, you know, leading the Pacific Division, looking very much like a Stanley Cup contender. Could be a potentially really interesting first-round matchup with the St. Louis Blues. What are you looking for going into that potential matchup?
Well, to touch on the Blues at first, my whole thing with them until their recent hot run was that they were a playoff team, but sort of like their floor bumped up to their ceiling. I was like, you know, they're going to be around the playoff hunt, around the wild card race, but like they're going to lose in the first round. Like that's kind of, those are the two scenarios and there's no other outcomes. But this, you know, they seem to have found something here. You know, any hot streak, there's obviously some, you know, fairy dust on there and it's not completely sustainable. Otherwise there'd be teams that are going, you know, whatever, 79-3. But I think that if you watch the Blues and look under the hood as far as what they've been able to accomplish since the Four Nations break, pretty impressive. And they added like a Snuggeroo to the lineup, you know, guys like Broberg and Neighbors, and this sort of like a second tier of young players on their team have really taken a step, or at least all elevate at the same time, very conveniently for them. They're dangerous. But that said, though, I mean, Vegas is probably, I don't know, one of a handful of teams that I think are cup favorites. Like, it's one of those things where I feel like this league, especially this year, is just shooting out like a top 10, and there's very little variance between 1 and 10. But I feel like Vegas is in that top tier if we're cutting it at, you know, 1 to 5, 6 to 10. And there's something clinical about them. There's something about their ability to pack the middle of the ice and protect Aiden Hill, and to just have Aiden Hill back there as a guy who really thrives in that type of environment where you're getting more low danger shots than high danger, and that's kind of his bread and butter because he's not super athletic. He's a blocking goalie. I just think they're so well set up under Bruce Cassidy. And then you've got Jack Eichel, you know, this dominant two-way force now. You've got a back end that's just ridiculously long and big. Like, they're built for the playoffs. They happen to always get 100 points in the regular season, if you catch my drift. Like, they're always building up to something in the playoffs as far as how they're built and coached. And yeah, as much as they didn't make any splashes this year, I still, every time I watch Vegas, I'm always like, not that I'm like surprised Thomas Hurdle's on the team, but it's always like, oh, like this happened not that long ago. It was about a year ago at last year's deadline. Like, he's still in some ways being integrated after a few injuries and whatnot, and still we haven't seen his full effect necessarily. So yeah, and then you can say the same thing for Hanifin. Like, as much as they have roughly the same team as last year, I feel like last year was such a rush to get all those guys at the deadline. There wasn't, you know, much payoff there, and then they're getting the payoff this year.
Death, taxes, and an Oilers versus Kings first round series every spring, John. looks like it's going to be, what is it, this year four? Year four of a Kings-Oilers matchup. But it says here, that this is the year that the Oilers are actually vulnerable to the Kings in round one. Agree or disagree?
I mean, based on how the team's seasons have gone, I think that's fair. Like, especially, you know, I'll put it this way. If Leon Draisaitl wasn't having the tremendous season he was having, I would be pretty low on Edmonton right now, generally. And I think if you look at the Kings and their body of work this year, I think it's a no-brainer to be generally pretty high on them. It's just a matter of, will these LA Kings put any pucks in the net come playoff time? They've been in some ways like Hurricanes West when it comes to the playoffs, where the creativity goes away, where they, you know, sure, they can lock down at least, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl aside. They can do pretty well defensively, but there's no juice on the attack, and that's been kind of the story of these matchups. So, yeah, I think that the Oilers are definitely vulnerable. I think that, you know, to go back to sort of like looking at the season and thinking, okay, things will change with Winnipeg and with Washington. Oh, they can't be this hot for the whole season, and they have. I feel like I've felt the opposite about Edmonton with their start and just how things have moved along. I've been still waiting. Okay, when are they going to kind of snap back to life as a full team? Again, Draisaitl aside, who's having this tremendous transcendent season. But, you know, as much as I can talk about the Kings having the edge here, at the end of the day, when you have Connor McDavid and, you know, prime Leon Draisaitl, it's really hard to bet against them, or at least predict against them. But no, they're vulnerable. I don't love their blue line nor their goaltending. So that's a huge red flag. And nor do I like their forward depth. So it's like, what are we doing here? What are the Oilers?
Yeah, they're not fast. They're just not fast like they were last year. They had so much more team speed.
Yeah, so it's I don't know. It's weird, right? Because on one hand, you go, okay, Edmonton, like it's easy to count them out right now. And then on the other hand, you go,
yeah, Connor McDavid
shown in the and also when you look at the Kings, you almost go in the other direction. You go, great regular season, but like I haven't liked what you've done in the playoffs. And of course, these two teams have played against each other in the playoffs, so that's another layer of things in terms of the matchup and can the Kings handle the rush attack of McDavid and Draisaitl and company.
Let's whip through the Eastern Conference playoff matchups, at least as they're situated right now. We can start with what, for my money, is probably the least compelling option there, which is Carolina against New Jersey. And I mean, New Jersey without Jack Hughes, hard to be too excited about this one. But Carolina's in a fascinating spot as well, having, you know, acquired and then moved on from Mikko Rantanen in season already.
I have very little faith in this Devils team, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah.
When you lose Hughes, that's just such a blow. Like, Jesper Bratt's been fantastic. He's going to finish like top 10 in scoring, but losing him, and then I know Dougie Hamilton might make his way back, but it's just, I feel like the Hughes is sort of the planet that the Devils orbit around. And when you're missing him, and for an extended period, it's not like this has just happened and they've been fine for a couple of games. It's like, it's been pretty obvious they're missing him. That just takes them down so many pegs. And Carolina is such a well-oiled machine under Rod Brind'Amour that they're going to be able to pick apart the Devils. And I'm pretty high on the Devils long-term, but I just, it's like taking away, I don't know, to circle back to the Oilers. It's like, if they were going into the playoffs without McDavid or Draisaitl, you're kind of betting against them, right? So I don't know what to think of the Hurricanes as far as how deep they're going to go, given their history and the type of shenanigans they pulled off during the season, as far as maybe not shooting for the moon this year and being more pragmatic with Rantanen. But nevertheless, they're a really strong club on paper, and they always, you know, at least win one round under Rod Brind'Amour. So I think you're right, Jamie, where it's like, that's a boring series on paper, and it'll probably be short.
Are you subscribing to the conspiracy theory that the cowardly Florida Panthers are tanking to avoid the Battle of Alligator Alley in round one?
I don't think so. Like, I know it's easy to do that, and I know most people are half-joking when they bring it up, but no, I don't think so. You're going to have to go through this team anyways. One of those teams, I guess, Tampa or Toronto, depending on how things shake out here if you're Florida. But, I mean, that's a bloodbath of a first round, Tampa and Florida. I don't know about you guys, but I would put Tampa Bay really high on the list. Maybe my favorite coming out of the East, given what they've looked like over the last couple of months. And
yeah, they're all dogs.
Yeah.
And, that team has the most dog. No other team has more dog.
Absolutely not.
It is what it is.
We saw that at Four Nations, right? You see, you know, Hagel and Sorelli have their moments individually, and it's like you're kind of astounded that they could be on the same team that also has Kucherov and Hedman and Gensel, and then Vasilevsky has found his old form. It's like, that was the thing about what happened with the Lightning when they won their cups. It's like, you know, oh, can they do it again? Can they do it again? And then I remember looking at the different ages. I'm like, their oldest guy is like 30 or 31 after their last cup. It's like, of course they can do it again. It's just a matter of, you know, not shedding too much depth where you have you have nothing beyond your stars. And it's taken a couple of years to get there. And, you know, I'm sure it'll help next year when the cap goes up a bit here. But Julian Breezewa has found a way to, you know, facelift some of the roster around his stars, who are still, you know, young-ish. Young's the wrong word, but not over the hill. Even Hedman, who, you know, needed some time off in the offseason, you know, needed to maybe recharge. He's looked pretty good this year. So, yeah, the Lightning are scary.
Yeah, I think the Lightning have the chance to make a very deep run. Now, Toronto, Ottawa, the Battle of Ontario, not officially locked in, but I'm sure I can speak for the executives at Rogers that they're salivating at the possibility of that being a first round matchup. And I mean, the way Ottawa has played this year, especially defensively, that's not going to be an easy matchup for the Maple Leafs.
No, I mean, the Senators have been kind of the story of, I guess I would say, the second half in a lot of ways, where they've just kept chugging along. You know, maybe they haven't had the Blues streak of 12 or 13 games, but they'll go, you know, 5-game winning streak, lose 6, whatever. And Travis Green has got the team for once playing responsible hockey. I mean, how long has it been since we can look at the Senators and say, like, this team is at least competent defensively? And Allmark's been stealing games. Forsberg's been stealing games. You know, I don't know about you guys, but Tim Stützle looks like he's going to be, speaking of dogs, Thomas, he looks like he's going to be a dog in the playoffs. Like, there's something about him and his assertiveness, even though he's a finesse player, that I feel like will really shine in the playoffs. Braden Point, for whatever reason, is coming to mind as a similar player where really, you know, skilled, speedy, you know, he's going to put up big points, but has that sort of competitive fire and that juice that runs through them that can be really beneficial in the playoffs. So, I mean, that's a you know, as weird as it sounds, it's a scary opponent for the Maple Leafs, even though they should still be favored, especially because they've looked pretty good overall under Craig Berube. But, yeah, it's something about Ottawa that's that I haven't quite unpacked yet, but that seems – I don't know if like sustainable in terms of like going on a long run is the right way to put it, but you know, they're sort of on the right path finally. Like, it looks real. It looks like even if they lose in the first round, they're going to come back next year and look like they're ready to actually take off as a team that can go places.
The Washington Capitals against the Montreal Canadiens. Is this our final one? The Canadiens, maybe getting Ivan Demidov here, have been a fabulous story. And the Habs are the best team in the league. Shades of 2010 here, John?
I don't know about that. I think you know, yeah, the Habs have been a great story. And I like what they're doing long term. I've got a lot of stock in Hughes and St. Louis, that tandem in Montreal and that era of Habs hockey and where it's headed. But this season, I think the Capitals are, you know, I think something that's gone, I mean, people have talked about it, but it's something that's almost like hard to quantify. The fact that no Capitals went to the Four Nations tournament and they just, you know, hit the ground running right after it. And obviously all this Ovi buzz and now it's over. And that's a good thing because now they can focus on the playoffs. I just feel like destroy Montreal, but I don't think it'll be that difficult of an opponent for a Washington team that's kind of got everything going for them.
We'll see if they can make short work of the Habs. John, hey, thanks for doing this, man. This was a lot of fun, and hopefully we can talk again when the playoffs get going.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me on. Have a good one.
That is John Mattis covering the NHL for The Score and taking a whip around there's some duds in there. As I said, New Jersey without Jack Hughes going up against Carolina, that's a tough sell.
That's the only dud.
You know, like they used to have the NBA TV series in the NBA, and it was always Atlanta versus whoever in the first round. That this would be, if there was an equivalent for the Stanley Cup playoffs, that would be the series.
Or it's like how the Houston Texans every year play the Saturday afternoon game. Yeah.
Exactly. The Houston Texans memorial spot. Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I think it could be a little more interesting than you're giving it credit for. I think the Devils have held it together, you know, reasonably well. It looks sounds like they might get Dougie Hamilton back for the playoffs, which would be a huge boost, obviously, for that club. And, you know, I think Carolina, like, I think, wouldn't it be funny if this is the year, like, after having sold and the whole sort of LaFaire, Mikko Rantanen, that this is the year that they break through? Because it does feel like they're going to be one of the heaviest round one favorites in the East, right? Like, them and the Capitals are going to be the heaviest round one favorites in the East, I would expect. And then you're going to face a Capitals team that, look, is really good, but also has been riding hot percentage-wise all season, right? Like, has the profile of the sort of team that can occasionally underwhelm a bit come playoff time. I mean, I don't know. I'm you know what? I'm a sicko, but I'm kind of into it.
Look, it's Stanley Cup playoffs still. Like, it's still going to be good.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying, you got it. Like, something's got to be the least entertaining series.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're still going to see, like, Logan Stankov and do some cool stuff.
You're doing the thing, though, where, like all-star snubs. And, like, how can you say this guy isn't an all-star? It's like, well, then choose who you're kicking out. You know what I mean? Like, what series is it better than? Minnesota-Winnipeg, maybe?
No, I mean,
this is what I mean. They're all, like, of course, there's entertaining quality in all of them.
For sure. It is the eighth among eight.
Yes.
But I'm still going to watch.
Yeah. Because it's Stanley Cup playoffs.
All
of course.
Of it.
It's still fantastic.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Jampro, from showrooms to stock rooms and everything in between, Jampro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit jampro.ca. Get your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Some good ones already in the inbox that we can dive into next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your thoughts in now. We got a couple of open segments here to wrap up the show. Of course, the Canucks are playing in Dallas tonight against the Stars. Potentially mathematically eliminated if they lose in regulation. Well, they definitely are if they lose in regulation, but any other result, they would not be mathematically eliminated from playoff contention tonight. So we can dive into the inbox here. As I said, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this one comes in from Tyler, who says, why did Canucks marketing just send membership requests with Brock Besser in the promo material? Just seems strange given the situation. And I did see the Canucks Twitter account, X account, put that out there as well, letting people know they could buy season ticket memberships for next year. And it's Quinn Hughes, obviously, front and center. But then it's Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser also in the picture, the three players there. And I get the question about Brock Besser, like, hey, he's a pending UFA. If you were to bet on it at this point, I think you'd say it looks more likely that he's going elsewhere, that he's not re-signing. You never know. You don't want to write it off completely. He could be back next year. But isn't it kind of odd to have a pending UFA as one of the three guys you're featuring to try to entice people to pay money, pay a lot of money to watch the product, to buy into the product next year. No, I don't think it's that. I don't think it tells us anything about Brock Besser's future. I think the simplest answer is, who else are you putting up?
Sorry, first of all, let's be real. I've sat in these meetings where, you know, often actually that's the job of a PR head, where you're hopefully in close enough lockstep with hockey operations on long-term planning that you know which players to avoid. And sometimes you'll be not sure and you'll just be like, hey, let me check on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have a decent feel, right? Like these conversations happen. Should we put this guy on cups? Or we're gonna print 1,000 commemorative, or 10,000 commemorative, 100,000 commemorative cups. Should we put Brock Besser on it, given that he's a pending UFA?
Mm-hmm.
Is like an absolute normal, ordinary business item in a professional hockey team environment, right? Like, flat out. And so these are selected and do sometimes tell us. Remember McCann when he wasn't included in that, like, rollout website? The team had, like,
vaguely.
The team had a rollout website, and that's what, like, alerted Panthers management to, like, hey, maybe we should call. That was, like, the angle came from it. So this is real stuff. I think it's not so much like, does this mean that Pettersson is for sure not going to be dealt? Does this mean that Brock Besser is for sure going to be re-signed? Like, I don't think that's the case. But I do think it tells you something pretty interesting about sort of the hollowing out of this core.
Well, to me, it's just the simplest way to look at it is, what are the other options?
Right?
Like, it almost has to be those guys by default. Brock Besser is the longest standing, longest tenured member of the team. Fan favorite. Elias Pettersson, also a long tenured member of the team, who is signed long term for all the valid uncertainty and questions about what they're going to do with him this summer. I mean, it's a cut and dried case. From one perspective, he's signed long term. Who else are you going to put? Who else are you going to have if you want to have people other than Quinn Hughes, who is obviously, by every definition, the face of the franchise in every significant way right now? Like, who are your other options? Your Thatcher Demko? He's got 1 year left on his deal. You just signed Kevin Lankinen to a long-term extension. Who are the other options? Connor Garland? He's got 1 year left on his deal. I don't think we really look at him like that. You know, you could say, like, Philip Hronek. He's signed long-term. He's a pretty important part of the team. Second, your number two defenseman.
Doesn't it feel like Philip Hronek would protest if you were like, you are marketable? He'd be like, no. Absolutely not.
Yeah, it's like he and he's well within his rights. You know, he's not putting himself out there. So if you're trying to market like this, I mean, these are your options. And it does, you know, you made the point about the hollowing out of the core. I forget exactly when this was. You were off and I was doing the show solo, and I was kind of making the point, we're so used to talking about this Canucks team and the core. What are they going to do with the core? Have they supported the core enough? Is the core over? It's like, well, the core is over. There is no core here to talk about anymore, right? It gets really just Quinn Hughes, because you just look at the uncertainty around everyone else that we once put as part of that core group. Brock Besser's a pending UFA. Thatcher Demko injured, 1 year left on his deal. Another goalie signed long term. Elias Pettersson, who knows? Even if he's here, who knows?
So it's Quinn Hughes and?
It's Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, I think that's fair.
But you still, if you don't want to just have Quinn Hughes front and center, you got to choose somebody else. And there's just not a lot of logical candidates that are kind of, you know, have that built up relationship with fans, that fans have invested that much in, that are also signed long term and also playing good hockey. Like, there's no one who checks all three of those boxes that you can put on these type of marketing materials. So you kind of have to include the guys who should have been part of the core, or, like, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. Brock Besser and Elias Pettersson, or at least have at one point, and just go with it, because I don't really see what else you're doing. Now, Rocket and Langley says, well, on the other hand, what would you say if Brock wasn't up on the promo? I think that's a very fair point. Would people be reading too much into it way?
I mean, we'd be saying he can't put him on the promo. He's a UFA.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be that complicated.
Somebody else texted in. It was Tim, I believe. This is the Ethan Bear kiss of death.
Right.
Do you remember Ethan Bear included in the... Not, I don't think it was like a core piece,
no, but
I forget,
like,
what it... There was a statement from Jim Rutherford at the end of the year to season ticket holders, and it was basically like, we've got this exciting group of players, including Ethan Bear. Then he injures himself at the World Championships, correct? And then they don't tender him, and then he's out of the organization a few months later, a couple months later, right?
Yep.
So And that's a much more direct, like even than a marketing campaign, that's a much more direct from hockey operations saying, this is an important player for us. This is a player you should be interested in. You should be invested in. And if you're spending money, this is a player you can expect to see. And then extenuating circumstances come up and he's out of the organization. So I do think that's an important data point here with this regime and this organization, that you can be included in this kind of thing one day, but it can change. The math can change in a hurry, especially with an impending unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I do think the, you know, the truth is that, I mean, I think you're right when you make the point that, like, who else are you going to put up?
Yeah, somebody texts in Jake DeBrusque. He's signed long term. That's an interesting answer, at least. I mean, as you were saying, like, there's only really one guy in the lineup tonight that you can say with confidence is going to play top 6 minutes for this team next year, and yeah, that's Jake DeBrusque.
I'm surprised it's
Jake
not DeBrusque. DeBrusque.
Jake DeBrusque is a good answer. Your biggest UFA sign last year. He's had a decent year. All those things here long term. That's a good answer. So you could you have done Hughes, Pettersson, DeBrusque, Hughes, Pettersson, Hronek? I guess. But even that, it feels like you're stretching kind of the definition of the core a little bit here. If you're roping in guys like Filip Hronek and Jake DeBrusque.
Yeah, I think so. So, yeah, it's just amazing, right? Like, it's amazing how quickly life comes at you.
It evaporates?
Yeah.
Why is no one talking about Derek Forbort in this?
Also a pending unrestricted free agent.
Yeah. Why, Pugh Suter, same thing. I mean, you think we'd be omitting Pugh Suter if he wasn't, like, if we didn't have to?
If Pugh Suter had signed an extension before the deadline, like, he's absolutely the kind of guy that could be there now in the marketing materials.
Jesus.
I love how tickled you are by that.
New
Jamie.
Part of the core, Pugh Suter. You know I love me some Pugh Suter. Absolutely.
This is a bad time, man. It's not a good time.
It's tough. And I that's part of why there's so, I mean, look, there's a lot of reasons why there's so much frustration from fans right now. They had really high expectations, reasonably so, coming into the season, and the team has fallen well, well short. But I think it's also the fact that you're seeing the core kind of evaporate in real time. JT Miller's been traded. There's major questions about Elias Pettersson. Brock Besser, not extended, not but also not traded, just kind of in limbo. Thatcher Demko, go through the list. So it's not just that this iteration of the team fell well, well short of expectations again, but it's also that you can sense that this iteration of the team is no more. We're moving on to a new era, and who knows what that era is going to look like. And it's also a massively high stakes era because of the Quinn Hughes factor.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's tough. Like, it's tough to not have those options. And, you know, I saw like, you know, this is the problem with list Twitter lists. You know, people will like build out a list of names and be like, this team is loaded despite what the experts say. And, you know, and it's like, you think about like, what would it have looked like coming out of the bubble? Just as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Pettersson would have been the headliner.
Mm-hmm.
Hughes, Besser,
mm-hmm. Demko,
Horvat. People wouldn't have even included JT Miller on it, by the way.
No, they would have.
No, because he would have been seen as like old. It would have been like 25 and younger.
Sure.
You know, honestly, like, people wouldn't have. He wasn't considered core at that point. People forget this, but it's true. Demko for sure. And then it would be like Podkolzin.
Vertanen.
Hoglander. Vertanen for sure. Godet. Mm-hmm. Vertanen. Godet. Hoglander.
Not Tanev.
Podkolzin.
No, Tanev was old.
Now, does Yolevi get the mention?
100% yeah, only Yolevi gets
the... He had that stretch pass.
Dude, Yolevi, oh my God, the stretch passes. Dude, Yolevi, 1,000%. And then it'd be like, the Canucks are going to be a problem. That's like how it would end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I always roll... My eyes roll out of my head when I see those, right? Because life comes at you quick, right? I mean, even coming into this year, the idea of, at the very least, like a Miller, Pettersson, Besser, Garland, Hronek, Hughes, Demko. You know, like after last season, if you went into last summer, you were like, those seven guys give the Canucks a top end that should position them to contend. I don't even think that's wild.
No, it's not. Because at least in that situation, it's like all guys who have just performed really well at the NHL level. You're not dreaming on, oh, this guy's going to develop into a power forward or anything like that.
And then Demko's injury takes an awfully long time to heal. He doesn't make it back until December. And then he sustains a sort of back spasms related absence, and then he sustains another protracted absence because of a different lower body injury, and now he's going to play 24-ish games this season and go into the offseason as a major question mark as an extension eligible player. You know, Besser will have regressed from 40 goals to something between 25 and 30 over the course of this year. The club will have complicated their relationship with him by their post-deadline commentary, despite not monetizing him at the deadline. Mm-hmm. JT Miller will have been traded following an unexplained 10-game personal leave, right? Pettersson will have struggled for the last 98 games dating back to the 2024 NHL All-Star break, while also battling a multitude of injuries over the course of the season, including whatever injury will have caused him to miss the last 10 games of the year following that New York Rangers departure. Quinn Hughes will have had another Norris caliber season, but also battled a hand injury, played through it, and then dealt with an oblique injury and complications stemming from it, missed the Four Nations tournament. We'll play what? By the end of the season, he'll have missed 15-ish games?
Yeah.
Something like that. Filip Hronek will have missed 6 weeks because of a lengthy injury. Connor Garland will have missed a game, but mostly played like Connor Garland. And it's just like the slow whittling away at the edge. And now we're trying to list, what does the Canucks core look like? Hughes, we feel good about.
Quinn Hughes, boom.
Hronek, we still feel good about, but we also know he's not a superstar.
I think you There's also no get into like a semantic debate about the core. You know sure. what a core is.
But he's a core. He's signed forever and he plays top pair minutes.
All right.
I think.
Sure. Okay, so Hughes and Hronek.
Pettersson, we have bigger questions about now than the huge questions we had last summer. Don't we? Isn't that fair to say?
Oh, yeah.
Garland is extension eligible now. Demko had a miserable season from a health perspective, right? Also struggled with consistency throughout the games that he did play in. And is extension eligible, so his future is clouded. You know, and then you start listing the Volander, you know, Marcus Pettersson, like people are going to be doing that. They're going to be like, they're going to build these lists. It's going to be like Hughes, Hronek, Marcus Pettersson, Tyler Myers.
I don't think anyone's putting
Mancini.
Marcus Pettersson and Tyler Myers on those lists.
They're going to build these lists that go nine deep, and then it's going to end with the Canucks defense is a problem.
Sure.
You can find that tweet out there right now.
I like this text. Maybe some light tampering, but throw Marner up on the poster. I would love that.
Well, if it came from the team,
it's not. What you do it is like
it's not tampering like, for our texters.
You make
it
like you're promoting the matchup with yes. like scumsy players like Mitch Marner at Rogers Arena. Wink, wink.
But just omit the Leaf part on the jersey.
Yeah. Just from the head up. So you can't see the Leafs jersey.
He's wearing white.
Come see Elias Pettersson and Mitch Marner on the ice together at Rogers Arena next year. Somebody else said it should have just been the Petterssons. DPD.
Oh.
EP40 and Marcus Pettersson. That would have been pretty good. Actually, that would have been funny.
I
would tip my cap to that, no doubt about it.
Except you have to have Quinn Hughes on the picture.
Yeah, that's true. It absolutely has
honestly,
to be
honestly, why
Hughes.
Not just be
why
Quinn
not
Hughes?
Just Quinn
why
Hughes?
Why not just own it?
I think it's a little too on the nose.
There is one thing
it's
about
like
this
like Quinn
team.
Hughes, and that's it. That's a little too much. There too is, too direct.
Look, you can complain that there's only one thing for this team to hang its hat on, but if that one thing is one of the coolest things in hockey, which is Quinn Hughes doing stuff, and yep. like and like doing it with Tim Chalamet energy, let's go. Like, let's go. Quinn Hughes is cool enough.
Is Tim Chalamet? Like, he seems pretty upbeat to me. No?
Well,
is that wrong?
Depends what movie you're watching.
Oh, yeah, but I just mean in his, like, personal appearances.
Oh, yeah, I meant more like...
Oh, you meant in, like, a moody movie, I see.
Correct. Like, Tim Chalamet considering the consequences of going south with the Fremen.
Right.
That's the face that Quinn Hughes is, like, always making.
Yes, that's true.
Like, I see an intergalactic.
He's got big, what was the Lisan Al Gaib? He's got big Lisan Al Gaib vibes.
Let's go. Anyway, And then, you know, let's be real too. Quinn Hughes' Canucks future, like, aside from, do you believe that Pettersson will bounce back, which we are going to do months of content on this airwaves about over the next 5 months. Mm-hmm. Like, buckle up. Do you like Will Pettersson bounce back content? Because you're going to get it.
That's right.
Telling our audience right now. But if that's plotline A, plotline B is, what does Quinn Hughes' Canucks future look like?
Oh, I think I would say that's plotline A.
You think that's plotline A?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. It is.
Right. Because
they might trade Pettersson.
Well, if they trade Pettersson, it's going to be like, what does Hughes
think? What does this mean for Quinn Hughes?
You're right. So plotline A is already.
Everything is subsidiary to that plotline.
Yeah, you're right.
Pettersson story.
You know what, sir? I will capitulate.
That's right.
You are correct.
Damn straight.
And so I feel a little bit for fans, because you're going to start to see the same people, the argument's going to be like, the same people that told you Pettersson was going to leave are now saying Hughes is going to leave, right? And let's be real. Hughes' Canucks future was a huge talking point. Now Pettersson's Canucks future was a huge mm-hmm. talking point for, what, 18 months before he signed? There was the Bo Horvat's Canucks future discussion that permeated for a fairly long time. What's Chris Tanev's future? We literally had that during the fall of 2020. I'm not lying.
Nope.
Do you remember the, what is the Sedin twins' future? When they got all the way to the wire?
Will Alex Adler waive his no trade clause?
Oh, man.
Perennial talking point.
Can the Canucks keep Luongo in Vancouver given that his family is in Florida? That was a multi-year story. Can the Canucks sign Ryan Kessler after he trolled the entire city during the 2010 Olympics? That was a multi-year story. You can go back to Pavel Bure on this. So these have been, we do this for 20 years. Do you want to, what's the other commonality here, by the way?
They all stayed.
They all
much,
stayed.
With exception of Tanev, but even that wasn't like he wanted to get out.
Now, Quinn Hughes obviously has unique considerations given that he has two brothers that play for the same team elsewhere. But, the truth is that this organization has had a pretty long history of being able and successful at trying to retain their stars. Like, that's baked into the last 25 years of Canucks history. It's not that this, market has struggled to attract top talent in NHL terms. And so I get why fans are going to be frustrated by this, but it really is natural. It's a natural outgrowth of how this market cares, of how this market thinks about the long term when discussing this team. And, the one thing that I would, I wrote it a little bit over at my mailbag at The Athletic today, but I do want to make the point, because I got a question in that was like, do the Canucks have to consider the fact that Hughes would have a greater potential return this summer than he would next summer? And the answer to that is no.
No.
And the reason for it is that until he's extension eligible, you'll always be trading him as a guy who might be a 1 or 2 year piece, as opposed to a guy where you're like agreeing on the framework of a deal, giving permission to a rival team to talk to his representatives, and then selling him as a long-term fixture, a la like the Hurricanes with Mikko Rantanen, right? Like, there's world where Hughes' value doesn't spike in 12 months.
I also just think the only way you even start to go down that road
is if
he tells you, but like, hey, this is where it's going.
Clearly,
right?
But also we can just put this one to bed, right? Like, there is no logic behind even considering that this summer, regardless of what he says, to be totally honest with you, because until he's extension eligible, you can't even really do a fair deal. Not that any deal in which you lose Quinn Hughes in the trade will ever be a fair deal. So this is going to, these two topics are going to be done ad nauseum. We're going to do them ad nauseum. We'll try to put fun spins on them as best we can. But I do at least want to just like capture the Hughes thing, capture the history of Vancouver actually keeping its players as a general rule, remind people that we can have this conversation without being accused of like panicking or sort of agitating or clickbaiting the market into a frenzy. And the underlying dynamic of it is that while we will speculate and talk about it, because everyone will, the truth is that this is a 12 months from now or 15 months from now topic more than it is a topic to run all summer.
It's also, I think it's really important to stress beyond just the natural fretting about a player's future, the two brothers thing. And I'm not saying that makes it a lock or anything, but somebody texted in about a week ago, like, hey, well, we don't hear this amount of fretting about, you know, Connor McDavid leaving Edmonton. And I mean, I think there's a fair amount
of it. We absolutely do.
But also, if Connor McDavid had Luke and Jack McDavid playing for, you know, the New York Islanders, you know what you'd hear a lot of? You'd hear a lot of worrying if he's going to go play with them. Like, again, I'm not saying and therefore it's going to happen, but it's just such a unique situation. To me, it makes perfect sense why it ratchets up the stress about it happening. Like, it's not one, two brothers on the same team. So you get it. You get it why people are going to be a little worried about it.
I believe McDavid's brother is named Cameron.
There you go.
Not Jack.
Well, no, I it was the Hughes brothers, Jack and Luke.
Oh,
if it was Jack and Luke McDavid playing in the New York area.
Got it.
All right, we'll take a break. There's a lot more questions I want to get to in the inbox. You can send yours in as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Final segment of Canucks Talk coming up next here on Sportsnet 650.
Considering the consequences of going south with the Fremen.
Right.
That's the face that Quinn Hughes is like always making.
Yes, that's true.
Like, I see an intergalactic.
He's got big. What was the Lisan Al Gaib? He's got big Lisan Al Gaib vibes. Is this like our song's second unofficial theme now?
Number 5?
Ode to Joy? No, this is number 9. Come on, Dom. We went over this.
That's the joke.
Sorry, I get my 5s and 9s mixed up sometimes.
You have 5 and 9 blindness?
I do, yeah.
Big Dolly Parton.
You wanna meet me at the you wanna meet me at the orange number 9? Anybody?
What does the show come to?
We're big.
Oh, it's always been bad.
Big pro Europe. Didn't he write this to like celebrate European unity or something like that? Or am I just making that up?
I think they do use it as the like
the EU the theme EU song anthem. Or something.
The theme song. The anthem of Europe.
I think it's Ode the Euros. The Euro song. Soccer no, it's qualifier is Ode to Joy.
Well, it's because it's the anthem of Europe.
It's like a continental anthem.
Correct. The Euro
and
knock.
Also our anthem here on Canucks Talk for some reason. Yeah. It is now that. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. All right, going back into the inbox and a couple of other questions.
By the way, you guys were right.
What?
1985 became the official anthem of Europe.
There you go.
Yeah, I knew
we're
that.
All learning lots.
Okay,
today.
I can confirm.
Yeah, I told you.
You didn't know the year, though.
No, that's true.
Thank you for filling me in, Dom.
Sit down.
Sit down. I am sitting.
Done. Check. Way ahead of you. Where did this one come in? All right. Gord in Poco. Do you think the Canucks will do anything to address their lack of team toughness for next season? Well, I certainly think they'll try. It's always, as always with this kind of thing, it's a question of how do you prioritize it when you've also got a lot of other things to take care of and limited cap space. And far and away, your most pressing need is dynamic offense and offensive talent, which, you know, sometimes goes hand in hand with toughness, but not always.
So I was thinking about this because of the Canucks cap positioning overall, right? I've given Rutherford and Alvin a lot of credit for untangling the cap mess that they inherited. Mm-hmm. And I think that credit is well deserved, right? But now we're sort of looking at a moment where, you know, we're looking at a moment where fundamentally the Canucks do not have a lot of relative purchasing power, despite being decently positioned with 14-ish million in cap space and basically 18 guys signed going into the summer. The problem is if your 18 guys are signed and they're star players, right? And you have 14 million to like fill in the gaps, right? It's like one top four defenseman and a third line center upgrade is what you're looking for. Still hard to do, by the way. Third line center is a really difficult thing to find. But that is kind of doable. The problem is I'm looking at this team and I'm thinking, do they need two star level forwards? Do they? Like, I'm asking. Like,
yes.
I say yes.
Absolutely.
And yeah. and does the number become three if Besser leaves?
Well, I think at that point it's just, are you really doing that in one off season? So even if you need it, like two is the number you're aiming for. You know what I mean?
With or without Besser.
Yeah.
So two star level forwards.
Let's put it this way. I think you need two forwards better than Brock Besser. So whether Besser stays or goes doesn't really change that calculation.
Well,
how high are you on
Besser? I mean, I'd call him like a top 50 NHL forward.
I mean, I'd have to get a, you know, I'd have to do some research on that before I was commenting one way or another. But I think don't you think you need two players better than Brock Besser to be if your goal is to be a Stanley Cup contender next year?
I don't know. I think you need one better than Brock Besser and potentially Besser.
One if Elias Pettersson returns to form.
Right.
So you have,
if Pettersson doesn't return to form, it's over anyway.
Yeah.
You don't have enough juice.
So if you have Elias Pettersson plus guy better than Besser and Besser all in the fold. Okay. Elias Pettersson back to form, one true star who's maybe in between Pettersson and Besser and then Besser. So Besser would be your third best forward. I can buy into that. You got strength on defense. You're hopeful you're goaltending, all of that. I can buy into that. But if Besser leaves, then yeah, you're looking at, you definitely need two.
By the way, he's 65th in goals this year.
Yeah, but he's top 50 in goals across like a large sample. I'm talking like 6 years. So, and he scored 40 last year, and he's pretty good two-way. He doesn't hurt you in top of the lineup minutes.
Yeah, smart, I think he's more, like, if I was looking at it, I think you'd want to have...
I'm not saying he's a top 30 guy, but he's a top 50.
I think if you wanted to fashion yourself as, like, a no doubt about it top 8 Stanley Cup contender going into the season, you'd have three forwards better than Brock Besser. Or at the very least, you'd have two clearly better and then one on par. You know what I mean?
My point is it's... Actually, you're not actually that well positioned because you need to add star level talent.
Yes.
You need to add the hardest thing to find, right? Like, this team's going to need, I think, to speculate on, you know, ideally veterans with term, but I mean, I'm even thinking about, like, you know, Cole Perfetti had a really acrimonious negotiation last offseason with the Winnipeg Jets, signed a 2-year bridge. And, you know, the Jets don't let players walk willy nilly. Right? Like, they are very keen to hold on to their guys. But, you know, Perfetti plays on the wing in Winnipeg. Could he be a center for you? Do you know, that's the sort of bet where
you're going to have to take on some uncertainty. Oh. You're going to have to take on some uncertainty and some risk and some upside and hope that it hits. Because you're not getting the already perfectly formed, no doubt center, 25, and he's been really productive. Like,
for
that,
free.
That's not happening.
Yeah.
Or even for any price, maybe. Like, those guys.
Yeah, teams don't move them.
They only come available if there's something wrong, if there's a flaw, if there's a fly in the ointment of some sort.
Or if you can offer the team something more valuable.
Sure.
Right?
Or they play for the Sabres.
Well,
but that's the fly in the ointment. They've been bad because they play for the Sabres.
And they immediately get good once they leave the Sabres. But yeah, so, you know, the task of this offseason is so monumental because we're talking about a team that basically needs to rebuild the core that they currently don't even have to, like, advertise season ticket memberships for next season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean... Like, it does Boston commit to a tear it down with McKenna
on the horizon?
On the horizon? Like, can you get Pavel Zacha to at least flesh out your forward depth? To at least give you, like, you've got a big body, consistent 50-point center to play behind Pettersson. It's a decent stylistic comp. He makes $4 million. He's got a couple years of term.
But
in a good age range.
Is that, like, that... Your answer, that's just the answer to a different question. The question is, how do the Canucks get elite talent in? He's not an elite talent.
No, but yeah.
He's a good player.
No, you're right.
But it's just, that's not the market. Like, that would clearly be like a plan C approach.
See, I think it's probably not going to be a plan C approach. I think that's the sort of deal, you know, maybe you aim higher on the wings, but you know, I think at least one of your two guys is going to come in at that sort of tier. And that would probably be a win, provided that the cost isn't unreasonable.
Yeah. Well, to tie it back into
honestly, Jamie, even if the cost is a little bit unreasonable, where else are you finding a player like that?
I agree. I get it. Again, he's a good player. It's just, I'm not sure how much it moves the needle or answers the question we're really talking about. What was one of their biggest issues this year, even when most of their players were healthy? It was offense.
The only team that generated shots at a lower rate 5-on-5 was the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah. I don't know how much Pavel Zacha and the like are changing that equation for them. Probably not very much, even if they're good players. So I get it. I get why you go out and do it. Is it better than doing nothing and throwing your hands up? Yeah, probably. But I still don't think it gets to the real core issues. Now,
I just want to throw a hypothetical at you. If you were to do Mancini, Hoglander, And honestly, probably another asset. Let's say a second round pick, but
For Pavel Zacha.
And re-sign Besser. How are you feeling about this team?
Not good. Is that team meaningfully better offensively? No. The personnel isn't.
Yeah, and what do you do at third line center? Like the Teddy Bluger experience with him playing up lineup, I think is
I hope
it's opened some eyes about just like, you know, you lose Pugh Suter and you go into next season with Ratu and Bluger down the middle. Like, I think that's a problem even if you do add a guy like Zacha.
Yeah. I think if you have that, if they have that type of season or off season that you just laid out, I don't want, like, crisis is probably too strong, but I mean, it's really tough to see the upside.
Yeah.
It feels like you're not adding any upside, and that's the number one thing they need to add. And that just doesn't come close to doing it. So anyways, to tie that into Gordon Poco's original question about team toughness, it's just there's so much else that's so difficult that they have to accomplish. I'm sure they would, in a perfect world, they would love to dramatically upgrade their team toughness and add that to their identity, change the way they play in that regard. I think we all know how much Rick Tocchet values that, but I think it's going to have to happen on an absolute shoestring budget with whatever they have left over, league minimum guys, that type of approach, because you're just not going to be able to commit the resources to doing it any other way.
Yeah, this is why I was team Braden Schenn at the deadline. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because ideally, if you are able to find some team toughness that plays up your lineup, you know, I think
that's why like a Sam Bennett conversation is potentially interesting if he makes it to market.
And back up the Brinks truck, whatever. I mean, honestly, like, I think Sam Bennett, given his offensive profile, is a massive risk at 10 million times six to 10 million times seven, which I think is perfectly reasonable within what I expect his market to be should he eschew remaining with the Florida Panthers. And I don't know, like, the deal probably ages poorly, but just bring in right now in this world, with what I expect to occur over the next 24 months, with the premium that I expect teams to place on just having good players versus having good players on efficient contracts, that switch that's about to be flipped. I almost think you worry about the numbers later if you're a team with as limited a forward group as Vancouver does. I'm serious.
It would be very hard to complain, as much as I would be simultaneously terrified that you just locked in like a 45-point second line center for 6 years at massive money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I would still be like, but I like it because it's Sam Bennett.
Well, and you just need players, man.
Yeah.
Like, this team just needs players. Like, they just need good forwards that can play roles usefully at the top of the lineup. So yeah, Sam Bennett, sign me up.
Now,
back up the Brinks truck, throw a caution to the wind.
This question comes in, and that's probably the only like clear-cut UFA that can even plausibly answer both questions. Even if he doesn't really answer the offensive upside question, at least it's close. Hey, top six guy.
Yep. Yeah.
top six guy and the team toughness and the mentality and the dog, that's probably the only guy who's checking both boxes so clearly or so cleanly for you. I do think this conversation ties in with this question from Sheldon from Surrey as well, who says, is it just me or do the Canucks need to focus on getting different makers and not necessarily a center? Winnipeg is first in the NHL, and Vlad Nemestikov is their number 2C, just saying.
Yeah, but Vlad Nemestikov, A, is really good. Second, while he takes line rushes second, their second line center is really Adam Lowry, who is a Mack truck of a human being and is real good.
He is not like an elite offensive guy in the way we often think about it.
No, but we would kill to see Adam Lowry on this
Canucks. Don't get me wrong. Adam Lowry is awesome. I think the point is, I do think there's a point there, though, where, yes, we all know how important center is. I mean, you can look at the depth chart and see, they've got a massive problem at center. Number one issue, though, as I was just saying, is elite talent. And so if you have a choice between, if at some point it comes down to, hey, we can make a run at this elite winger versus this non-elite center, like, I don't think you let positional value override you there. You go for the elite player. It's not as if they're flush on the wings with all these guys. It's like, oh, where are we going to play them? It's like, there's spots available.
No, but one thing to consider too is, I brought up the Perfetti example, right? And another one for me would be like a Connor McMichael, who becomes extension eligible for the Caps after this season. And they've obviously got a lot of work to do and a lot of talent and like to speculate on, on guys whose value is at a low ebb.
Mm-hmm.
McMichael's played the wing almost all year, but last year he played center and he struggled in the faceoff circle, but he still had, speed and scoring chops and juice, and he's still really young. Like, for me, those are the types of targets where it's like, okay, they're wingers now. And in Mike McMichael's case, a 60-point winger, like a really good one. But could he be a center for you? I think that's the other sort of way to think about it.
Yeah, again, like, kind of turn over every rock, get creative, take on, hey, there's some uncertainty here, so the league doesn't view him as a center, but we're at least going to roll the dice. And yeah,
like Gabe Vilardi is a winger in Winnipeg, and I think he's best suited to it with his pace. You know, this is kind of the Atu Ratu conversation we always have,
mm-hmm.
but could he be a center for you? I say I'm interested in finding
May him. As well try.
Yeah.
May as well try. That's where we're at. Anyways, I do think the point from even if you don't take the Jets example as like a perfect comparable, the point about, hey, let's get at least one elite guy in, then we'll figure out the center depth chart. I get it. Center is really important. There's a reason why teams prioritize it. There's a reason why they make a ton of money. Wingers are much more easy to find. All of that. Yes, you need really good centers. You also just need really good players in general. And talent has to be the number one priority for this team going forward and going into the summer.
We haven't talked about the Rangers getting absolutely outdogged by the dog-heavy Tampa Bay Lightning.
Uh-huh.
But man, they barked. The Lightning barked in a major way against the Rangers on New York ice. Rangers were booed off the ice after the first period. You know they'll be aggressive this summer to get this back on track. But it looks like, at the very least, the first part of the Kyle Dubas parlay is going to hit.
Yeah.
And they are going to miss the playoffs and at least be in a position where they'll have the option to surrender their draft pick.
This one comes in, man, how much better about the team would you feel having the New York Rangers unprotected first this summer? It'd be nice. And you got to think that pick would probably be more valuable than it was when they traded it.
Yep.
However, I'm not ready to quite buy into the that's going to be the McKenna pick doom and gloom yet, because,
well,
there's a coaching change coming.
I don't know.
You don't think so? I think Laviolette's going to be back?
I think there should be, but I've been saying that I think, because, privately we talk about this a lot because I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Right? And what I always say to you is the one thing the Rangers have is I think they're 20 points better with a different head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it feels like the New York media is not talking like that at all.
His post-game presser last night.
You felt like that was a Bjork's moment?
Well, I don't know that it was, because I think it's like, I think what he was saying is a little bit being misunderstood. But if you're just talking about like the fan pressure and the sense around it in the media context, I do think it's changed that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And now people are looking at it as like, oh, he's dead man walking.
Right. Well, I mean,
and then once that becomes the case and how people are looking at it,
if they get the right guy, You know, I think there's upside there. But I also look at it like Zibanejad really lost his fastball this year. Mm-hmm. Kreider really lost his fastball this year. All of Miller, Trocheck, and Panarin are 31 plus. Like if they, you know, their exposure from a surface area perspective, right? Like if one more guy loses his fastball, or if Zibanejad or Kreider don't bounce back or deteriorate further, like my God, mm-hmm. you're in real trouble. Especially because Fox, Keandre Miller, and Lafreniere, none of them took steps this year.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's a team in a
downside scenario there for sure.
Yep.
I also think they're going to be very motivated to do whatever they can, especially now that they don't have their pick for next year. Yeah. They're not going to have their pick for next year, right?
I just worry the Canucks having taken, you know, made reckless bets that frankly hit with the JT Miller trade in 2019 and then the Filip Hronek trade in 2024. Like those were very risky bets when the Canucks placed them, but it obviously worked out for them in both cases. The problem with placing volatile bets though, right? The problem with getting like solid wins, but placing risky bets is, yeah, it's nice to hit your like even money JT Miller, or your even money Filip Hronek's an unbelievable fit for Quinn Hughes. But the downside risk you're taking on to hit there is mammoth. And you don't have to lose 60% of the time or 50% of the time. You don't even have to lose 20% of the time. You lose once and it becomes something really devastating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's the issue with sort of going about team building in that way. Maybe the Rangers fix their costs and just surrender the pick this year, but teams don't typically think of it like that. They think of it like we want to bet on ourselves.
We want to bet on our ability to get better. Absolutely.
That's just like a natural for competitive human beings.
I think the only way they would surrender the pick this year would be if you're firing Chris Drury as well. Right. And then a new manager comes in and it's kind of like, well, hey, he made this bad trade. We're going to I want to have that pick going forward. You kind of sell it that way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If Chris Drury is around, though, he's going to make that pick this year.
And then
see what happens down the road. That's the show for today. It is a Canucks game day. They're taking on the Dallas Stars at 5, which means up next here on the station, it's the People's Show with Bick, Dan, and Sat take over on Canucks Central at 3. And they'll have your pregame show starting at 4 as well. We will be back tomorrow for a crossover Wednesday here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.